We the People Radio. My name is Aaron Ryan.
And my name is Bill Cundiff, and our sponsor this hour is Pape Machinery, our local John Deere ag and turf dealer. Pape has everything you need when it comes to John Deere. Go up and see them. They got mowers, tractors, implements, you name it. Got some good financing going right now, too. If you're looking for some 0%, they've got it. They're located at 3119 Twinview Boulevard in the city of Shasta Lake. Or you can catch them on the web at papemachinery.com. Oh, don't forget their phone number, 530-226-9226. And Erin was kind of tangled up in her wires there. She, her head was glued to the table because her cord was 6 inches long.
Let me tell you, it's another episode of We the People Radio.
Yeah, it was an episode there.
I mean, that.
Stalling for time.
There is always an episode involved. It all seemed fine until I put the headphones on, and then my head had to be laying on the desk. Yeah, not the most convenient. So at the risk of maybe... Let's see, what will we call it? Overplaying our hand?
Is there such a thing?
No, there isn't. Besides that...
We can do whatever we want.
Yeah. I know, because we are the people.
Oh, but look at Kathy. I guess you're going to be a regular. So we have Kathy and Officer Joe with us today because we are doing a... Let's see, we kicked this interview from March, I believe.
Yeah.
It was kind of a long time ago. This was Dr. Ken Finn that was going to be with us in March, but he got sick. And, well, he wrote himself a doctor's note, and then he got out of doing the show with us. So, of course, that makes perfect sense. We never saw the note, but we assumed there was one. Officer Joe was in charge of that. We'll blame him.
I'm thinking he probably didn't smoke any pot to feel better, huh?
No, I'm pretty sure he didn't.
Probably didn't do that.
Probably didn't happen. So we titled today Marijuana Medicine or Myth, because Dr. Ken Finn is the founder of the International Academy on Science and the Impact of Cannabis, ISAC. And we have that on our site at wethepeopleradio.us. And if you go to the tab marked pot, we put all the shows under that topic, unless I screwed up and missed one. But, you know, I try to put them under there so you don't have to scroll endlessly through the archives. But there's a wealth of information. We spoke about the legal side. There have been some interesting developments in that. We had Dave Evans with us last week. We talked about the legal side. We've had the research folks. We've had just a really wide array. We've had the sheriff on.
The moms that have been very active.
Moms. You've looked at the impact on families. So we've kind of done all these things, and we've had some medical people on. But just a little snippet on our guest, Dr. Ken Finn. He graduated medical school from the University of Texas Health Science Center in Houston in 1990. He completed residency in physical medicine and rehabilitation from the University of Utah in 1994, board certified in physical medicine and rehabilitation, as well as pain medicine. And therein lies the most interesting part, is the pain medicine part, and pain management in 2000. Practicing medicine in Colorado Springs since 1994, Finn serves on the board of the American Board of Pain Medicine Exam Council. So... this whole thing about, you know, this being this medication, and especially as regards pain, we thought it was really, really important to kind of bring that to the public, because we're being told a lot of things that are not necessarily true. And just for having more struggles down here. We're having some technical struggles that are causing a little distraction here. But the International Academy on the Science and Impact of Cannabis is a huge organization, a great place to get information and do research. So,
Aaron, you go to their library and you can find out every single thing you want to find out about cannabis. And they are the gold standard in the United States. When I refer boards of supervisors or politicians, I always refer them to ISAC's site.
And just kind of cutting to the end of his bio that's posted on the website for today, which is May 7th, 2023, Dr. Finn is a voluntary clinical instructor for the University of Colorado Medical School in the Colorado Springs branch, and he's done that from 2017 to 2020, sees pain patients at the Colorado Springs Rehabilitation in Colorado. So this isn't, you know, somebody who wrote a book about it. It isn't somebody who's just guessing and shotgunning it. This is somebody who works in that industry, deals with actual people who have been impacted by this. How about that? I was going to say harmed, but that sort of buries the lead, I guess, a little bit. Dr. Finn, we're glad you're not sick today, or any other day for that matter.
I'll be back. Putting up with my illness.
Oh, we had a little fun with the doctor's note thing. We couldn't help it.
No worries.
All right, so nothing. I know Officer Joe has like a list. Look at him; he's got a list.
Yeah.
Well, go ahead. We defer to your list.
Well, thank
Where would you.
You
like to begin?
Thank you. First of all, in full disclosure, I do know Ken. He and I have presented to cannabis boards before. And I hold him in very high regard. So, Ken, welcome.
I appreciate that. Thank you.
Thank you. Who, what, why is Isaac? First of all, what doctors are on your board, and was it started by doctors for doctors to get information on cannabis? Could you tell us a little bit
more
about
Isaac? Yeah, I mean, it was actually, I've been doing this for so many years, and kind of the reason I went down this road was because as a pain doctor and here in Colorado, we voted to legalize it for medicinal purposes in 2000. I mean, so we're 23 years down the road. We implemented it in 2001, and it was kind of dormant for a while because there really was no infrastructure with dispensaries or where patients needed to go or how were they going to get recommendations, et cetera. But as, you know, after a little politicking in 2009, we basically had de facto legalization when, you know, dispensaries opened up across the state like daisies, and actually to the point where they outnumbered McDonald's and Starbucks combined.
Wow.
I mean, there's so many medical marijuana dispensaries in the state. But then at that point, I started having patients coming to me as a pain physician that were on a very high amount of opioids, which we can talk about, which is a problem, and they were reporting very high levels of pain, you know, 10 being the worst pain. They were 8, 9, 10 out of 10, and then they were using marijuana for their pain. I'm like, well, clinically, that makes no sense. Why are you using any of it? You can have 8, 9, or 10 out of 10 pain off your opioids and off your marijuana. So I started doing a lot of research and reading and educating myself on the science of cannabinoids, and despite the fact that they're maybe components of the plant that can be analgesics or pain relievers, it isn't translating into the realm of product in the dispensaries. So I then, you know, started talking to my colleagues and doing presentations in local hospitals and working in schools. And the next thing you know, I've been for years, I felt like an army of one. I'm like, why are the doctors not saying anything about this? Because, you know, we already have legal addiction for profit industries with alcohol and tobacco and opioids, and now we simply added another layer of addiction for profit on it for reported use for pain, and the doctors weren't saying anything. So over time, I began to connect and network with some folks across the country, and we had this idea of, you know, let's put the information out there, because we, all of us individually, had the same story. We were all in our own little world, silos, talking about, you know, the harms that we're seeing. I mean, we have psychiatrists and emergency medicine doctors and pain physicians. And so that was the impetus to found our nonprofit, Isaac, which is the International Academy on the Science and Impacts of Cannabis. And we have a dermatopathologist, a psychiatrist, emergency medicine, and an internal and addiction medicine people on our board. But we also have physicians from all over the world that include people from Australia, from Ireland, from the UK. I mean, we have Sir Robin Murray and Dr. Marta DeForti, who are the most quoted researchers on the link between cannabis use and psychosis. We have people from Columbia University, you know, very well-rounded, and we're always wanting more people to come and join our ranks, because we're not prohibitionists, and this is not a prohibition issue. It's really we approach it from a scientific perspective, that despite whatever evidence may be out there for benefit, it's certainly outstripped and outweighed by the harms. And actually, if you've gone to our library, we've purposely limited the amount of information in our library because it's just so overwhelming. There's so much information out there, and it changes literally every day. I'm reading a paper or two or even three a day on things that are happening. Like the last 2 weeks alone, there was a significant amount of data that came out on schizophrenia. And I think this large study that came out of Denmark, and it's, you know, quoted also by NIDA, the National Institute of Drug Abuse, clearly stated that 30% of schizophrenic men could have been prevented if they had averted cannabis use disorder.
30%?
Wow. The daily frequency, you know, the near daily frequent high users. And then the products aren't what they were when I grew up. I mean, I grew up in the day of ditchweed where it was, you know, 2 to 4% THC.
Right.
And now, I mean, that doesn't exist in Colorado. The average smoked flower is about 20%. So you're talking about, you know, a 400% fold increase of what I grew up with. And that's just for the smoke stuff. And then you get into the concentrates that are 40 to 60% THC, and then the dabs, waxes, and shatters of the world, which are, they don't even look like plants. They just look, they look like gooey, you know, honey, thick stuff that you vaporize with a blowtorch. I mean, that's not medicine. I mean, combustion isn't a good delivery system for, as a medication. So that was kind of the impetus of founding Isaac.
I like that.
To provide mainly a resource for people that are interested. I mean, you can look at Google or PubMed and find what you may be looking for, but we were trying to find or develop a repository of cutting-edge information that allows anybody to look for information about, you know, psychosis or emergency room visits and, you know, pediatric poisonings and all these things that are happening across the country under the nose of more states legalizing. I just don't understand how and why people continue to go down this road knowing what is happening. And it's certainly frightening based on the stories I hear from my emergency medicine colleagues and what they're having to contend with in the emergency department.
Yeah, I can't, it's hard to fathom why people, you know, they go to a doctor if they have a medical issue, anything that's serious enough to go to a doctor for, I guess, but yet they'll go to their local bud tender for pain management. And frankly, I was a little surprised you didn't have any bud tenders on your board, but that's we can talk about that later. These are the guys that are these are the guys that are the experts that are advising people on what's the best product for their different conditions
Talk about malpractice.
Yeah, I'm surprised that somebody hasn't stepped up and filed some kind of malpractice against these people for.
You know, it's so funny you were talking about that because you know my experience, but most people don't know my personal experience. I was not currently a registered medical marijuana patient in the state of Colorado. Out of curiosity,
not a user, I might add, though, Ken.
Full disclosure, I don't use.
Right.
I was somewhat curious. Based on what my patients were telling me, you know, how easy was it to get my medical marijuana card? So a couple of years ago, I went online, and I didn't make anything up. I didn't lie. I was a very active person. I played collegiate soccer. I blew my knees out. I've had multiple surgeries. I need knee replacements, but I try to remain active, and it doesn't bother me that much. But, you know, every now and then, the cold front comes through. I take some ibuprofen or whatever. It works. But I went, it was a telehealth visit because it was kind of during COVID, and literally I was approved in a minute. And there was no, you know, 60 seconds. There was no medical record review. There was no questions on tried and failed treatments for my knees. They didn't ask for MRIs, reports. I could have been lying, so they didn't even ask me to see the scars on my knees because it was telehealth. And they actually never asked me my level of pain, which on a day-to-day basis runs about a 1 to 2 on a 10 scale. So, you know, mild pain, it's manageable, it's tolerable. Not at a point when I pulled the trigger on a knee replacement. And then a year later, I got my renewal in a similar amount of time. It was kind of bogus. So just this morning, I cast an email to some colleagues of mine asking, because when the medical marijuana rules sunset here in Colorado several years ago, under Colorado law, you have to have a bona fide doctor-patient relationship in order to recommend marijuana for your patients. And number two, you're required by law to maintain medical records. So I have asked for my medical records, and can't find them. I can't get them. I have asked my recommending physician, you know, about getting my medical records, and she said, just talk to your primary care doctor. So, I mean, to me, that does, as a physician, that does not constitute a bona fide doctor-patient relationship.
No.
And the fact that they don't have medical records clearly shows that doctors can practice bad medicine in plain sight of the law with no repercussions. And it took me 3 years of calling, and I can tell you, I talked to the Colorado Department of Public Health and Environment, which oversees the medical marijuana program. I spoke to the Attorney General at the time. I can't remember who it was off the top of my head. And I talked to the Marijuana Enforcement Division, the State Medical Board, and everybody was pointing fingers at everybody else. And what I was finally able to get, somebody told me that when they passed the law, the state never designated an entity or an organization to enforce the law. So right now, it's a free-for-all. You can get your card. The doctor can tell you whatever. I asked my doctor, well, what if I had an adverse event like palpitations or chest pain or I felt a little psychotic or hallucinated? And she said, don't come to me. That's not my problem. That's not a bona fide doctor-patient relationship. So when, again, the Colorado marijuana law sunsetted, I said, well, please address this. And it was ignored. And everybody else at the state level ignored me. And actually, in the most recent bill that we had, Senate Bill 1317, where we're trying to discuss potency issues and access to youth, the same things came up again. Oh, you have to have this relationship and you have to have records. It's a bunch of BS because they don't do it. And I have documentation from my patients that, well, I got my marijuana card from this dispensary or this clinic over here, and I would call that clinic and ask for medical records, and they say we're not required to maintain them, which is a complete fallacy because by law they are. So it's just been this debacle, and nobody cares. It's just frightening to see the state, you know, this far down, 23 years down the road, despite the infrastructure that we have now, still ignores completely the issues surrounding these relationships with doctors and patients.
Why would it be any different if you wanted your, as far as the enforcement part goes, they wanted to go after a doctor for, say, prescribing a medication illegally or whatever, wouldn't that be the same folks that would enforce, or why would it be different?
Well, because the reason it's different is because it's not a prescription, and I think that's the side door.
Just
and I think the people that created the amendment, and that's the other problem, is that it's embedded in our Constitution. There's no way we're going to pry it out. It's embedded in its Constitution in Colorado. And the side door is, and the way they bypass it and loophole, is it's not a prescription. So they can't go after the doctor for telling a patient to do X, despite the fact that some doctors lost their license in other states during COVID because they were telling the patients things about COVID that may not have been true. because we didn't know at the time.
We don't know about any of that.
A little bit of a double standard there.
There was no lying
during that. It's a complete double standard. And the fact that the state just completely ignores their own laws is somewhat bothersome to me. And I think a lot of the other states have just followed suit. And if you're looking at, you know, you're talking about the opioid crisis that we're in an overdose crisis.
Hold that thought, Dr. Finn. We have to take a really quick break. We're going to come back. Our guest is Dr. Ken Finn. You're listening to We the People, and you can find us at wethepeopleradio.us.
This is Officer Joe with your marijuana message. Don't buy the corporate marijuana lies whose end game is to not pay any taxes. California has failed to control the grows. Dispensaries are selling out the back door as well as selling other illicit substances. Do we really need the damage to the environment, suicide, schizophrenia, hyperemesis, cardiac events in elderly users, drug driving crashes, genetic damage, pulmonary damage, neonatal low birth weight, and lost IQ for our youth? No, we don't. Remember, let's be careful out there.
Songs about this, so little time.
Oh my God, that my youth, man.
Holy, like, you know, the songs we used to listen to, and then it's like, oh, it's got kind of an ugly tint on it. But Kathy was
Dr.
curious,
Finn.
Dr. Finn,
I have a question for you. When you got your recommendation, did the doctor say, oh, you should be taking 10 milligrams twice a day, or was there any type of dosage recommendation on top of that?
Absolutely not. And actually, when I got my renewal, I asked her more pointed questions about potency in particular.
Right.
We know that the high potent products are much more dangerous, particularly on the developing brain.
Correct.
And her response to me, I'm glad I was sitting down, said, well, you can use as strong of a product as you want as long as you feel okay.
Wow.
I'm like, so if I feel okay after drinking, you know, four beers, I feel okay.
Yeah.
I'll be clearly impaired.
Can't feel your hands, but...
Yeah. What's that?
Yeah, you can't feel your hands, but yeah. I feel great.
I feel fine when I take
I
five Norcos.
Fine. I keep bumping into the wall on my way out to my car, but I feel fine. But yeah, the fact that she didn't give me any dosing, and I asked her about dosage. Should I say 10 milligrams or 100 milligrams? And she clearly had no clue on dosing, product, potency, risk, adverse events,
wow,
or anything. She was simply, it was a cash cow for her.
Oh, yeah, and this is, I think this is what we're seeing across the nation is, mm-hmm, when we talk about the alcohol, you know, like obviously you would have immediately gotten a DUI for your alcohol consumption. And if you had been in a crash, you could actually sue the bartender who served you for over-serving. So now we have a situation where there is nothing as far as is the pot or the weed or the marijuana or whatever the heck you want to call it. There's nothing, no dosage, no ramification, no nothing. Who do you go back to for over-prescribing or over-recommending? Or there's nothing.
Because in Constitution, the CDPHE, the Colorado Department of Public Health and Environment, protects and keeps confidential the identities of recommending physicians, despite the outcome.
Oh.
We have cases here in Colorado where youth have committed suicide,
right,
because of their cannabis psychosis, and the parents have nowhere to turn. They're screwed, and it's absolutely frightening that parents whose lives are being destroyed over this plant have nothing, they have no recourse.
Well,
not every kid that's going to use, obviously, to become psychotic or have a problem.
No, but 30% increase.
And that's with adult males.
Yeah, it's no small impact, especially when you look at what's, you know, lying all about our streets. Right?
Oh, I know.
We just have these people strewn about the sidewalks. And So if they weren't strewn about the sidewalks 20 years, 30 years ago, why is that happening now?
You know, that's a really good question. I wish I had a great answer, but I just think it's these open drug policies that have that.
Right.
You can't
ignore
the point
that.
Of encouraging use, you know, decriminalizing, you know, 4 grams of heroin in Denver.
Well,
you can walk around with a lot of heroin on your person, right. and not get in trouble. But are you really going to be using 4 grams of heroin, or do you have intent to distribute?
Right.
We're battling the legalization of all drugs here in California, using the model of Oregon and Washington. And,
same here in Colorado.
And yeah. same thing. So I don't know why that's going on across the United States. What I found amazing, Ken, that you reported was the normal dosage that is subscribed to is 10 milligrams. And you see that's supposed to be listed on the products that are distributed.
With no here scientific foundation.
With right. no scientific right. foundation.
Right. Right.
But what I was...
It's an easy number.
Right, right.
It's an easy number. It's a metric number.
Right.
But if you look at the actual synthetic THC that's been around since 1986 called dronabinol,
right.
which is synthetic THC, the starting dose is 2.5 milligrams.
Right.
So one-fourth of what the THC that's in the stores.
What I was astounded to hear from you, and you can confirm this to me, was that you were seeing patients that were self-reporting something like 5,000 milligrams per day they were taking.
Yes.
Is that correct?
Yes.
I mean, that's...
They're in various delivery systems, smoking, eating, you know. And most of the time when I ask them, you know, what product are you using, the vast majority have no clue. They have no idea what they're using. Is it a Peyton Manning Kush smoked bud flower that they're smoking? And then I ask them what potency is. They have no idea.
No.
They don't know. It's all directed by the bud tenders who have the only requirement to be a bud tender is experience with marijuana, 21 years of age, and a pulse.
Experience meaning you smoked
you don't need
it yesterday?
Medical background or training.
Yeah. Or preferably before the interview.
Yeah. You smoked marijuana before the interview. So Ken, tell us. What is a paid pain management doctor, emergency room physician, and what do you see from that experience coming into the ER and into your clinic regarding high-potency marijuana?
I'm not an emergency questions. Medicine specialist. You know, as a pain medicine specialist, I had to go to medical school, which was 4 years, and I had to do a one-year internship and a three-year residency. And then I started practicing pain medicine after that before the day where they now require pain medicine fellowships. That's another year or two after your residency. So there's a lot of training involved and, you know, having done this for so many years and the people I'm working with, I write these test questions for people, physicians that want to take, you know, a higher level of understanding and care of their patients that have pain disorders, because it's a very challenging patient population, and it can be very frustrating, but it can also be very rewarding. In the emergency department, kind of a similar thing. They do a one-year internship and a three-year residency in emergency medicine, so it's several years of training. But what my colleagues here are seeing and what my colleagues across the country in the emergency medicine world, and the data in the scientific literature is showing a significant amount of, you know, child poisonings. Some of the, you know, the city of San Diego alone is now seeing 37 marijuana poisonings a day, and most of it is psychosis. If you just do the math, San Diego and San Francisco and L.A. and, you know, up and down the coast, there's hundreds of people with cannabis psychosis going to the ER. And then also in California, the number of people over the age of 65 has shot through the roof that are going to emergency rooms with marijuana poisoning. So they're getting inundated. And nobody talks about, you know, a lot of states that I've worked with around the country, they say, oh, we're going to make all this money, and right. it's going to save our budgetary woes. And, you know, I published a paper here that just between 2009 and 2014, just on the cusp of legalization, one mid-sized hospital in Colorado Springs lost $20 million just from marijuana-related ER visits.
Ken, what are the symptoms of marijuana poisoning?
It's a spectrum. People can get paranoid. They can have a suicidal ideation. They become psychotic. You know, they can be depressed, anxiety. They can also end up, you know, injuring themselves if they fall down the stairs or they get in a car crash. So there's a spectrum of potential marijuana-related presentations to the ER. But when I did my study and the data that's out there, it's very heavy in mental health. Like one of my authors, Sam Wang from Denver, was a pediatric emergency physician, and the number of teenagers and adolescents presenting the ER after de facto legalization went up significantly, with 70% of those presentations being psychiatric. And as you know, marijuana is the most prevalent substance now found in completed teen suicide. Never used to be that way. It's a kind of a bi-directional relationship. It's like, are they depressed because they're using, or are they using because they're depressed? We don't know. It's not a good study you want to do. But I've been following and tracking that data over time, but it never used to be that way. That trend shifted in 2012, where alcohol used to be the number one substance found when kids, adolescents, complete suicide. Now it's marijuana, and now it's nearly 30% that have toxicology is that they find marijuana. And half, the number two is still alcohol, but it's only 17%, nearly half.
Ken, so what about, you're talking about mentation. Tell me about some physical attributes like blood pressure, pulse, respiration, skin signs. What kind of presentations do you see when people are overdosing? And I'm going to use the word overdosing on marijuana.
Yeah, that would cause an emergency room visit. And
for a parent, Ken, who's...
I think the best terminology is poisoning.
Right.
Rather than
OD,
it's a marijuana poisoning, mm-hmm. And in the young kids, the younger the worse it is. They don't metabolize THC like an adult will, and 4% of the kids under the age of 5 or 6 end up on a ventilator. So depression.
Wow.
They can be unresponsive. They can actually seize. So the very young are really at risk of having much more life-threatening presentations than an adult. But then you get into the elderly population, and I'm knocking on the door of that one, but, by definition, at 65 and up, there's drug-drug interactions, because the older we get, we tend to be on more medications. And I'm just going to answer a real simple question. CBD, which a lot of my patients are gravitating for because of media and exposure, and they read about it. It's in ARP magazine, et cetera. Guess how many drug interactions CBD has? Anybody take a guess on that?
A lot, because I read your paper.
Oh, shoot. Well, then you can't answer the question.
Bill? It rolls to you, Bill.
But it's changed. That's the interesting thing. It's changed. It's not what it was when you probably read the paper. Joe, you want to have a stab at it?
Oh, put me on the spot here, Ken. I'm going to say probably hundreds of interactions at this point.
575 drug interactions.
Holy moly.
Yep. So, yeah. And actually, what I've been doing now, especially with my older patients that come to my office, and they say, hey, I heard about CBD. What do you think about it? I go, well, before I tell you, what medicine are you on? Well, I'm on an anti-inflammatory like ibuprofen. Well, let's go to drugs.com and put in cannabidiol. And under cannabidiol, they will have any medication. They will have a section on drug interaction. You can enter the medicine that you're on to see if it interacts with cannabidiol. And certainly, there you go, cannabidiol has a interaction with ibuprofen, which is very commonly made. And older people that have arthritis, they're very often taking ibuprofen or other anti-inflammatories for their aches and pains, and even without a physician supervision, are ingesting cannabidiol, and without any guidance or knowledge of potential drug interactions. There's another drug called warfarin, which is a blood thinner, and that interaction with CBD is potentially life-threatening. And I've had patients that have had life-threatening issues before they came to see me because of their cannabidiol ingestion with warfarin.
So we have to take a really quick break, but when we come back, I would really like to know, just from your experience as a physician, if people are using marijuana, like, A, can you tell? And B, would they
fess up?
Yeah, would they own up to that when you're trying to help them? We'll be right back. When I lost my mind, there was something so pleasant about that place. Even your emotions had an echo in so much space. And when you're out there without care, yeah.
just knew too much.
This is Officer Joe with your marijuana message. Don't buy the corporate marijuana lies whose end game is to not pay any taxes. California has failed to control the grows. Dispensaries are selling out the back door as well as selling other illicit substances. Do we really need the damage to the environment, suicide, schizophrenia, hyperemesis, cardiac events in elderly users, drug driving crashes, genetic damage, pulmonary damage, neonatal low birth weight, and lost IQ for our youth? No, we don't. Remember, let's be careful out there.
They did a bad, bad thing. They did a bad, bad thing. They did a bad, bad thing. They did a bad, bad thing.
You ever loved someone so much you thought your little heart was gonna break in two?
Yeah, can't play that one enough. The crazy song. We might have to play that next hour, too. We've decided we like it. It's our favorite song now. All right. So you meet with a patient, and the patient says, I'm having whatever, whatever. Do they say, oh, and by the way, I have my marijuana card, or I'm using CBD, or... And what's the difference if they're, you know, I don't know, eating gummy bears or using CBD? Is there one?
Well, there's a lot of difference,
okay.
And I think over time I've begun to have much more open and honest discussions with my patients because they're curious. They want to know. I typically don't endorse the use of using both opioids and with benzodiazepines. I mean, we already have a black box warning for that. I also don't support using other centrally acting substances together, including cannabinoids and opioids. And a lot of times I'll give the patient the choice. I said, okay, well, if you're using marijuana for pain, let's taper your opioids off and have a nice life. And the vast majority are like, oh, no, 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 I don't want to do that.
Exactly.
I go, well, isn't marijuana like helping your pain? And most of my patients say no. I go, well, what's it doing for you? They say, well, it makes me sleepy or not care. And then I ask them about what they're using, what dosing. Smoking marijuana, you're going to have a much more rapid onset of effect, probably within, you know, 20, 30 minutes, where it peaks and then kind of gradually goes away. Edibles, on the contrary, they have a delayed onset effect, which is creating a lot of problems because people will eat a gummy bear or a cookie or whatever,
yeah,
and they're like, well, I don't feel anything, and then they eat another one or two pieces, and then they don't feel anything, and then it hits them like a ton
of
bricks, and then they have a problem. They become very paranoid. I mean, there's a case in Denver where, and it's public, it's Richard Kirk, who in 2014 had gone out to buy a bunch of edibles and became acutely psychotic because he'd had wasn't experiencing anything, so he ate a bunch of them, became acutely psychotic, and his wife panicked and was on 911 trying to get help, and during the 911 call, he got to the gun safe and shot and killed her.
Whoa.
He's
serving
30 years in prison for killing his wife. So now their three children don't have parents. So the delivery system will have a different onset of effect. And, you know, when I talk to the patients, say, well, what are you using again? They'll say, I have gummies. I actually had a patient who opened up her pack of candy in my office, in the exam room, and took a couple bites off of it. I'm like in the middle of the interview and the history and before the physical exam, she's like, oh, I go, yeah, tell me about your marijuana. She goes, oh, I got some right here. I'm going to have a piece right now. And she chomped a big piece of her gum.
Wow.
So, yeah. It's amazing. But they don't realize, I mean, I don't know if she drove herself, you know,
yeah.
And she's like, So that's the question. The problem I have is dosing. So, for example, the gummy that she had, it was a package, but I believe each gummy was up to 50 milligrams. So she took a nibble. What dose did she get? I have no idea. She has no idea.
Right.
you know, she took a little chomp off of it, and I'm like, well, was that like a 16 milligram dose you just scarfed down? I don't know. So that's the issue I have in terms of dosing, because there just are no standards at this point. And again, like I mentioned
and
earlier,
no warning labels.
What's
right.
that?
And no warning labels.
No warning labels, which is a huge problem. And the other issue is product integrity.
Right.
You know, what is
yeah.
she ingesting?
Right.
You know, we know that a lot of these products may be contaminated with anticoagulant rodenticides or pesticides or fungicides.
Spray adhesive.
Right.
That's what, I mean, we've seen 55-gallon drums of that out in the grows.
Oh, for sure. For sure. And that's the thing that, you know, these recalls that are happening, you know, you have to subscribe to them in Colorado to get a recall product. But they'll say, okay, well, today is May 7th. The warning comes out for fungus. So return your product that you purchased between November of 22 and February 22.
Yeah, sure.
So
it's gone.
Those products are long gone. And when you talk about, you know, fungus, for an example, there was at least one patient, I'm sure, where there's one, there was more. There's a cancer patient that was undergoing treatment in California, and he opted for his marijuana product rather than whatever they were offering him to manage his symptoms related to his treatment. And it was contaminated with fungus. So this cancer patient died from a huge fungal infection rather than his cancer.
God.
Because he had contaminated product. And California has an 18% fail rate when it comes to that sort of stuff. And the level of corruption, I mean, in Sacramento, they found the lab director purposely faking 30% of the pesticides he's supposed to test for. And that's rampant.
And yet, this person dies of a fungal infection, but the person or company that sold the product is not liable.
Yeah.
I don't know of any other product out there that you can retail and not have some kind of product liability.
Well, there is none. Pfizer shot.
Yeah, there's none. That's the problem.
Yeah, that's
there's
unbelievable.
None.
Pfizer shot.
So, Ken, getting back to physical attributes for parents, pulse rate, intoxicated patient, pulse rate elevated or depressed?
All the above.
Okay.
Potentially, and not all the above.
Okay.
Some patients or some people or adolescents, for example, may be using and be fine. You know, and somebody asked me to profile the at-risk person. And what I've kind of, based on what I know and read, it's usually a young male with a history of mental illness, depression, or what have you, that's using daily or near daily. That's the person that is much more at risk than the young woman or girl that goes to a party once a month and takes a hit off a joint one time. She's certainly not going to be at risk of developing a problem, whereas the other person is going to be at risk of developing a problem.
And isn't it interesting that in the spate of recent active shooters we've had done by young males, that many of those have been marijuana users with marijuana
history?
Yeah,
that's one thing that I've been trying to get a lot of work on. And it's so interesting how mainstream media completely dismisses that link.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, nothing to see there.
What's that?
Yeah, nothing to see there. Move along.
Yeah, it's like the penguins from whatever that little cartoon was. Like, nothing to see here, boys. Let's just move on.
I love them.
And, you know, I have examples of, like, the Richard Kirks of the world, who the onesie-twosies, where they might kill one or two people. When you get into the federal definition is three or more fatalities. And when you get into these mass shootings, I always am suspect, and I try to track down the toxicology report. And I have a growing library of people that have caused or did a mass shooting in various states, and only one thing in their system was THC. And I think it's just going to continue to happen time and time again. Like, I just did an FOIA request on the one from Allen, Texas, who shot eight people yesterday. And there was another article I read this morning out of Texas about kids getting into these, the isomers, the Delta 8s that are flooding
right.
the schools in
right.
Texas because of this, our lovely farm bill
right.
that has created all these loopholes on isomers and acetylated products that are ending up in schools across the country that haven't banned them.
Right. Same here in California. We banned the flavored tobacco products, but now the vape shops are big into the Delta 8, Delta 10, Kratom. Yeah, they're hot and heavy.
Yeah, it's interesting because people don't realize that when the Farm Bill passed, they make massive amounts of CBD from that.
Right.
And from the CBD, they create the Delta 8, the Delta 10, mm-hmm. the HHCs, the THCPs, because they all have the same molecular formula.
Right.
And then when they take Delta 8, they can actually change that molecule by acetylating it. I don't know if you've heard of the THCOs,
yep.
right?
Mm-hmm.
And so you can acetylate the molecule, which is more potent. And most people don't realize that the U.S. government weaponized THCO in the 40s as a chemical warfare agent. And I have the paper. I read that paper. It was, like, fascinating because it eroded the muscle coordination of dogs 3 times faster than conventional Delta 9.
So they were hoping to give it to what, to distribute it against the enemy and have
the
them
enemy. Yep.
fall apart? Okay.
Yep.
Yeah, and in fact, some of these, the Delta 8s and those, what I did in my research is there's not even an age limit sometimes.
No, there was a 4-year-old in Virginia that died from
yeah.
Delta 8 and his mom's
yeah.
on trial
yeah.
for murder.
Because there's no, any kid could walk into a vape shop and buy these products because there's no age restriction.
Yep, they go to gas stations or what
yep.
have you. And the other question is, well, did the kid really get Delta 8 or was there something else
right.
in there too?
Exactly.
Because the whole product integrity platform that I have,
yep.
What is really in there? And there's been a lot of papers that have come out over the past few years saying, buyer beware, basically.
Right.
What you're getting and ingesting or inhaling may not be exactly what's on the label. I have an example of a hemp product from Colorado that was a Charlotte's Web oil. It's a small amount, like 30 cc's.
And that's given for seizures, correct? That was touted as being a seizure medication very early on, wasn't it?
It was touted as seizure medication, but now it's touted as a wellness product. So
rebranded.
There's nothing on the label. It doesn't say how much CBD or THC is in there because it's supposed to be 0.3% THC or less, blah, blah, blah. But it's the equivalent of a capful of NyQuil. And I have the certificate of analysis of that capful of NyQuil has 84 milligrams of THC in it.
Whoa!
That's a lot of THC because you're only supposed to like have a drop or two. But a lot of people, I would think, you know, the younger person that has the financial wherewithal to get this is going to shoot it before he leaves the parking lot and then become impaired because he has 84 milligrams of THC on board. I'm sure it's happened.
Well, it's like the idea that somebody's going to take a bite of a cookie or half a bite
right.
or...
Oh, I can eat an entire sleeve of Girl Scout Thin Mints.
Well,
sure.
Exactly. Besides that, I mean, even if you were going to say bite, are we talking the one where, you know, your brother says, okay, you can have a bite of my cookie? Well, that's, you know, 90% of it right there.
Well, what potato chip was it? I bet you can't eat just one.
Yeah.
Doritos.
Like
yeah. Yeah. Eat all you want. We'll make more.
Ken, are you finding
taglines for that?
Are you finding pushback? Two questions. Are you finding pushback from the medical examiners and coroners, and that when you try to get the information? And then, secondly, are you finding that the departments of health across the United States really just are not educated, and therefore they're not putting out the proper messaging?
And no pressure. We have like 1 minute, so you could pick one of those, and we could roll the other one on to the next hour if you'd like.
Oh, yeah, I think we can definitely dovetail. I don't have too long of an answer for that.
Fire.
But I'm not getting as much pushback from coroners and medical examiners. I mean, the departments of health, when I request a toxicology, it's a process. I mean, it can take me weeks. I'm still waiting for the Uvalde shooter's toxicology because that's a very interesting... It's probably the most interesting case, and I'd like to talk about this when we come back. It's the most interesting case I have on a mass shooter who's dead that is still an ongoing investigation. I'm still curious about that.
And we're still
waiting.
You might
be able to help me answer that, Joe.
Huh. Well, we'll talk with you some more about that. Our guest is Dr. Ken Finn, and you are listening to We the People. You can find us at
wethepeopleradio.us.
And I ain't even till they throw me down. I had a little.